Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
We have the distinct pleasure, as we mentioned, to be joined by Matt Holliday, seven-time All-Star. Three of those were with the Colorado Rockies, a former World Series champion. Matt, thanks for giving us some time here on a Wednesday.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Oh, of course. The state of Colorado loves you and loves to hear from you, so we've been really looking forward to this conversation. First of all, let me just start here. How are you doing in the midst of this pandemic that we're living in?
Well, I'm doing as good as probably could be. It's obviously not as exciting as it is when you've got sports and you've got things to do and concerts and places to go eat, but it's been good to have the family together. We've had a lot of chances to spend time with the family, and thankfully we have some room to spread out here in Oklahoma. We have a property that has a bunch of acreage on it, and we can kind of go and do, and we've got a pond to fish, and we've got a wiffle ball field to play wiffle ball on, and we've got a barn to play basketball in. So we've got some places to kind of go and get the kids some exercise and kind of move around a little bit. So it's been good. I'm anxious to kind of get things going again. I miss watching live sports, and I miss watching the Rockies and the teams that I played for. And so from that standpoint, I'm anxious to get some action, but all in all, doing pretty well.
We're visiting with Colorado Rocky legend Matt Holliday. Brandon Stokely here. Matt, I appreciate you joining us, buddy. How difficult of a time would it be if you were playing baseball still? And a couple weeks before the season started, you know what? It stopped. And now you don't know when the start time is going to be. How difficult would that be for you as a position player compared to, say, a pitcher?
Well, I think from a pure just being ready for the season to kind of, you know, how long it takes a position player to get ready as opposed to a pitcher, it's really not as quite as long. I mean, we as position players need about 10 days of live at bats to kind of feel like we're ready to jump into a season, whereas the pitchers, you know, obviously have to build up their arm strength, and they build in their innings and their pitches and all the things that goes in for them to get ready for a season. It's actually quite a bit different. But I think, you know, this is tough, I think, for everybody, for all players, all sports, you know, not knowing as you go for your workouts and you go for your training, you're not really quite sure when this is going to get back on where you're playing, and everyone's trying to figure out what their routine is and talking to some guys, you know, even Nolan, you know, there's days where you're not quite as motivated to go hit, where you're not quite sure what you're getting ready for or when it's going to happen. It's a crazy time of sort of not knowing what's going on and unlike anything that we've ever seen. So it can be difficult, but I think if you told me as a position player today that, hey, we're going to start the season in 2 weeks, that would be no problem for me to get ready. And I don't think any position player would complain about that. As long as the pitchers have continued to throw and keep their arms in shape, if they get a scenario where the health experts say, yeah, this is something that we think can happen, I don't think it's going to take that long for players to get back up and running.
The one and the only Matt Holliday joining us here on Stokely and Zach, starting a new podcast here, launching it. We're going to get to that shortly. But first, Matt, part of the equation here with the sports is the college sports, that these kids are losing their seasons here this spring and at the back end of the winter. And your connection, and doing research on you before this interview and taking a deep dive, your connection to Oklahoma State is really incredible. You used the facilities when you were younger. Your father was once the coach there from 97 to 2003. Your cousin Heath was a catcher there, if I'm not mistaken, and your brother Josh mm-hmm. is the head coach, and you are the hitting coach and the outfield coach for the Cowboys. What has it been like being in this equation where these kids' mm-hmm. seasons are getting taken away from them?
Yeah, it's really amazing how fast it happened. Really, we were I think it was a Thursday, and Fresno State was on their way. They even had left Fresno, and maybe they were in Phoenix, and we got word. I think after that that basketball game in Oklahoma City, when they found out that Rudy Gobert, I think it had tested positive, it just really happened so fast to where we went from getting ready for a series on the weekend against Fresno State to all of a sudden, you're not playing this weekend, to you're not playing for a while, to your season's canceled, to send the kids home. You can't have them on your campus. Wow. And that all happened in about a seven-day period. So it just happened so fast. And I think, obviously, it's proven to be the right decision and you know, a lot more serious maybe than we anticipated initially. But it's been hard. You know, I mean, you go from being in the middle of the season to excited about your team and kind of where your young guys are getting better. And it's a lot of fun and a cool environment to be in a college environment and coaching these kids and seeing growth. And then all of a sudden it's over and they're sent home and you're not allowed to be around them. And now you just don't know when, you know, you kind of summer ball is kind of up in jeopardy. And then, you know, we start back in August with school, and then the fall, we have our fall practices, and we get a chance to play a couple games in the fall, and just the unknown of that and how fast it happened has been very, very interesting and difficult. I think a lot for these young kids, and like you said, the older players, they've given all the spring sports their year of eligibility back, which is great. So our seniors will get to come back if they choose to, and all those guys will be the same class that they were this spring. They'll get that opportunity next spring from an eligibility standpoint. So I think the NCAA has done right by that and giving these kids a chance to come back. Like you said, it's been very, very strange, very difficult to kind of make sure these kids are getting their, because they're still doing school. And so to make sure they're staying on top of their academics from a distance and making sure that they finish out the semester in good standing and leave them the opportunity for next year and so forth.
And we're visiting with Colorado Rocky legend Matt Holliday. Matt, I got to ask you about the Nolan Arenado Colorado Rocky situation. Nolan came out, said he felt disrespected. We had the pleasure to talk to Bud Black a week or so ago, and Bud said once they got to spring training, it seems like things have settled down. What'd you make of that? And you've been in baseball locker rooms forever. Do you think something like that is salvageable when, you know, your star player comes out and says he's feeling disrespected?
You know, it's a tough situation because, Nolan is obviously a tremendous player, competitor, leader, and friend. It was one of those deals where it's a tricky situation because I think when he signed the long-term contract and the Rockies showed him great faith in giving him that big of a contract, I think he felt like that the promises that came with that were that they were going to be competitive in the market and bring in players around him to help support him and help them to get to the postseason. And I think that the one thing about Nolan is he's very, very competitive and he wants to win, and he's a baseball junkie, like just loves the sport, loves everything about it, lives, breathes, eats, sleeps. But I'm sure, as you guys know, he's very much baseball only. And I guess when you feel like that the team maybe didn't do the things that they had promised and some of the comments that were made in Nolan's direction, I felt like, you know, obviously he felt disrespected. And I just think that he's a professional. And when you get down to spring training and you get around your teammates and you get around that competitive environment, and you tend to kind of, you know, get back into that mode of, this is what we got and let's go out and compete. And you start envisioning guys having really good seasons and how would we put together a winning season? And I think it probably did die down when he got to spring training and got around the people that he loves to be around and got doing the things that he loves to do, which is competing and playing baseball. So hopefully, they can find a way to work together and kind of bury the hatchet, so to speak. I don't think there'll be any trouble in the locker room. I don't think that, you know, there's such a big divide, I think, for the most part, between the front office kind of up top, and then you've got your clubhouse with what the players are, and you, every day, the staff that you're around every day. You can kind of – I think it's a pretty easy place to kind of turn the page, and hopefully that's where they're at.
Matt Holliday joining us here on Stokely and Zach. Really appreciate your time, Matt. I took a deep dive into your career last night, and your 2007 season, and I said this earlier in the show before you jump on, before you jumped on, you could put your 2007 season in the same vein as other great seasons by any individual in the history of professional baseball. You are the National League's RBI leader with 137. I went back and looked. Your RBI total in 2007 would have led the NL for each of the last 10 years. You were also the NL batting champion. You hit 340. That would have led the NL in 9 of the last 10 years. You became the fifth player in the NL in the previous 59 seasons to lead the NL in both average and RBI. You did so much in that season. 11 home runs in 12 days. That's only happened one other time in the history of the sport. Reaching base safely in 38 straight games. That's still a franchise record. A 15-game hitting streak. A 17-game hitting streak. You were just absurd. And then in the playoffs, you went nuts. In the NLDS, you hit multiple home runs in that sweep against the Phillies. In the NLCS, where you were the MVP in sweeping of the Diamondbacks, you hit 333 with multiple home runs, four RBIs. When you look back at 2007, amongst all of that, just as an individual, and I know there was team success there, of course, but just as an individual, what do you remember most about that year?
Well, like you said, I mean, the run into the playoffs and what it took for us to get into the playoffs was the thing that stands out the most. The team and you know, the drama that went into the end of that season and how we got in and you know, how it all unfolded. Those are the things that stand out. And the group of guys that you do it with and you know, with Todd and then a lot of the guys that I played in the minor leagues with and then, you know, had guys like Josh Fogg and just the chemistry of that team and the fun that we had as a group, I think that's what stands out. You know, from a personal standpoint, that was, you know, obviously my best season. And you know, it's one of those years where you just kind of felt like you were in the groove almost every day and the slumps were short. And the hot streaks were long, and you were able to. I was able to hold my swing and hold that comfort and confidence that it takes for a hitter to be great. I was able to kind of put those things together in a very consistent manner. And obviously, when you're doing really well and you're helping the team win, it's a lot of fun, and you feel like you know, every day you show up to the ballpark, you're going to do something good to help the team. It was, you know, like I said, it was one of those seasons where it was kind of one of those things that from a confidence standpoint and, you know, ultimately ending in the World Series, it was pretty incredible ride. And, you know, obviously something that I'll always remember and get a chance to show my kids that, hey, Dad was decent.
Matt, I got to follow up with this. Man, I told you I did a deep dive. You should have won the MVP that season. You finished a runner-up to Jimmy Rollins, but you had more hits in less at-bats. You finished with 6 more home runs. You had 43 more RBIs. From a batting average standpoint, yours was 44 points higher. You were walked more times. You had a better on-base percentage by a huge margin, and it was the shortest discrepancy of voting between you and Jimmy Rollins dating back to 1991. Do you feel, and I'm just asking you to keep it real with me, do you feel like you got jobbed a little bit there?
I was really disappointed. I thought that my body of work was going to get that award. I was disappointed. I it goes back to a little bit of the Coors Field thing. I think sometimes the players that play at Coors Field get a little disrespected with the numbers that they put up. To be honest with you, I was disappointed. I thought that I would get that award, and you know, and hearing from a lot of people and my peers leading up to that they were all, you know, we go on these Nike trip, you know, and you see a lot of your peers and they're all congratulating you on winning the MVP and this and that, and making it to the postseason. And I'm like, well, you know, timeout, you know, and it hadn't been happened. It was a little bit disheartening, to be honest with you. But, you know, like I said, it, you leave it in the hands of the voters. And sometimes when you play in a mountain time zone,
and you play at Coors Field, you're going to get some of the voters that discount that, and they don't give the respect, I think, that it deserves, especially when you look at the ballparks that other guys play in. I mean, Coors Field obviously is a great hitter's park, but so is Citizens Bank Park where the Phillies play. And, sure, you know, you can go around the league, Arizona and Milwaukee, and, you know, there's a lot of great places to hit. So, yeah, I guess to answer your question, I was disheartened by that.
And we're visiting with Colorado Rockies legend Matt Holliday. Matt, last one for me. And before I ask the question, I just got to say you're a class act. And I ran into you. I don't know. You don't remember, I'm sure. But
no, I do.
You do, with my son. And it was you, Adam Wainwright, and Trevor Rosenthal. And I went up and I saw you. We were at a baseball game. And it was the Reds, St. Louis. And we went to it with Bearcat Jim, my buddy. And we just so happened to go to lunch at Chipotle. And there you were with those three guys. And I went up and introduced myself. And y'all came and y'all sat down with us and just made my son's year. So you're a class act, buddy. And thank you for joining us and just being the guy that you are. Last one for me, question here. Houston Astros situation. How do you view that situation? I mean, you're a baseball lifer. How do you view the Astros and their banging on the trash cans and their cheating scandal?
You know, I think that there's crossing the line. As you know, when you're in sports, there's a difference between trying to, you know, kind of gain an advantage. If you're a second base and you can pick up the sign, the catcher's getting lazy with his sequencing of signs, and you have a deal where you're relaying signs from second base, or you're shuffling your feet or moving your hands or whatever the sign relay is from second. If you can quickly get what pitch the catcher's given and relay it to the hitter and get the advantage that way, then I think that's part of the gamesmanship. But when you start taking video and you start doing real time cheating from kind of behind the scenes, and you have I heard that they had some sort of NASA sort of thing where they put the sequences of signs into some computer data, and they spit out what each pitcher or what each team does. You know, I think when you start doing that, it's crossing the line, and that's cheating. And I think that's an advantage that plays a huge part in a game. When you know what pitch is coming in the major leagues, with the velocity and the movement that these pitchers have, that's a distinct, very, very much advantage that, you know, it sways guys' careers, it sways games, it sways World Series, it sways organizations and you know, a lot of money going into to all that kind of thing. So I thought it was, it's bad. I mean, I think that's a black eye for the sport and for that organization, and definitely puts a little bit of a, you know, tainted feel to their championship and you know, some of their guys, some of their players. It kind of makes you think different about maybe how good they are and maybe about their character a little bit. So I was disappointed in finding out kind of what all took place, and hopefully all that stuff gets cleaned up and they take a little closer look at making sure that there's none of that going on.
Yeah, and I think we all agree with what you just said. I want to ask you about your podcast in 1 second, because you have something cool getting started with your wife, Leslie, that was brought to my attention by, I guess, a mutual friend of ours, Jason Romano, who I just think the world of. But the last question from me before we get to that is, I know some people know this around here, but some may not, that you were not just a good high school football player. You were a great high school football player at the quarterback position, and not all conference. You were all American. You were the Gatorade player of the year in your region. And at one point, Jimmy Johnson called you a can't miss prospect. And I believe it was your junior season. You threw 35 touchdowns, which at the time was a state record. If baseball wasn't an option for you, did you believe in your gut, or do you believe that you could have made it as a quarterback?
You know, I would never say, I don't think that's fair for me to, having just played high school, to ever say that, you know, I think that would be disrespecting the guys that play in the NFL, played in the NFL. Like, the caliber and the level that, and the hard work and, like, the talent and things that have to work out to play in the NFL or to play at the highest level is amazing. So I would never say that you know, I would have made it to the NFL had I not played baseball. I think, you know, I had a lot of ability to throw the football and was, like you said, I was recruited heavily to play football. I love football. But I grew up a baseball kid and grew up at the baseball field. And as, since I was little, my dream was to play pro baseball. And I liked football, and I feel like I was a pretty good quarterback. But I would never, like I said, I would never say that I could have, you know, ended up in the NFL. Had I gotten a lot better and got some breaks and got under the right coaching and could I have possibly, potentially made a living as a quarterback? Maybe. But I would never say that, yeah, that would have worked out for me for sure.
That's a great answer to that question. Matt Holliday, the one and the only joining us here. Tell me about Table 40 and what you're getting together with your wife, Leslie.
Well, basically, you know, we have, as everybody, we have a lot of time on our hands. And you know, we have a heart for ministry, and we have a heart for, you know, our faith is very important to us as a couple, as a family. And we just wanted to kind of share a lot of the things and the people and experiences that we've been allowed to have over the last 20 years in pro baseball and in a lot of different ways. We kind of wanted to, it's called Table 40 because we feel like we've had a lot of great conversations and a lot of great learning and growth at the dinner table, or, you know, just hanging out with the guys in the clubhouse at the table, having coffee. And, you know, it's just kind of like, these are our friends. We want to bring them to the table and hopefully, you know, it'll be interesting. And, you know, Psalm 40 is where the Table 40 comes from. And that's Leslie's favorite Psalm. We just kind of wanted to share our story and share a lot of people that we have access to that are great guests and, you know, people that have had an impact on our life in a lot of different ways. So it was it's something that, you know, we thought would be fun. And you know, if a few people listen to it and you know, enjoy it, then great. So it's we appreciate you having me on to kind of tell people about it. And like I said, it'll be cool. We'll have guys like Adam Wainwright and some of the friends that I played with. And then we'll have, you know, like different kind of people maybe. And hopefully it's interesting.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, if it's as half of as interesting as this conversation was, you're going to be well on your way. I did not have a personal encounter with you like Stokely did. So this is my first personal encounter, and you've made just an incredible impression on me. I'm going to check out your podcast, which, by the way, is available at Apple, Spotify, and wherever you can hear podcasts. Check out this faith-based podcast called Table 40. It's Matt Holliday and his wife, Leslie. I'm so glad that Jason reached out and started a dialogue with me, because this has been an incredible conversation, and the gratitude is all on this end, Matt. So thank you so much.
No, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's great talking to you guys, and I love the area and the city of Denver and my time there, and obviously appreciate you guys having me on and helping me push this a little bit. But thanks for having me on and enjoyed it.
All right, Matt. There you go. Right, Matt Holliday. Thanks, thank you, man.
All right. See you guys.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank. Banking for good.